Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance beneath the cover of October skies. You know the leaves on the trees are falling to
What's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. And of course, when there's big things happening in the community of the farmers and producers and money, we got to call our expert, the goddess herself, Angie Setzer, Vice President of Grains at Citizens Elevator. What's up, Angie?
Oh, not much. Just living the dream. That's out here in Iowa. I'm spoiled now. We had that nice 75-degree weather here a couple weeks ago, and 45 degrees or lower just doesn't feel the same. So I'm ready for spring. Big time now.
There is going to be no spring. We're going to go right to summer. You know how it is out there in the country, right? You got to go.
I'm cool with that even. We can skip spring. Spring's just kind of nasty anyway. So if we want to jump right from this cold, snowy crap that we got going on to some nice 75-degree temperatures, I would not be sad. So, this winter's been extra stinky, and it really hasn't been that bad. Like, so I don't know what I'm complaining about. It's not like it's been a bad winter. It just has not been my favorite this year. I need to go somewhere warm, I think, for a while.
Well, if you just give up farming, then you can just go where it's warm, right? I mean,
if I could still do this job wherever.
No, I understand.
So, but that would be nice. I could handle it with a nice warm breeze coming in the window while I'm trading futures. Maybe I'll start wintering in South America.
I think you could then trade both crops, right? You could trade them all. So what are you seeing these days in the markets? I mean, I think we had, you and I had talked last time. We both looked for a nice rally, and we got a very nice rally pretty much across the board. I believe we both felt that soybeans were the weakest, and they have been. What are you seeing now? Yeah. What's your take?
Oh, I'm seeing much of the same. I'm still expecting wheat to get some more legs underneath it. I think there's some real issues with the crop out there. Right now we're seeing more of a currency trade happen, it seems, than anything else. The dollar's been stronger after Yellen talked last week about, sounded hawkish in last week's press conference. So the dollar's kind of rallied a bit. That took the air out of wheat and corn sales. So I think that, for a short period of time, we're going to pay attention to that. The money flow is just not going to be there. But from an overall crop production standpoint, I think we've got some real issues. I know we do in our backyard, in my growing area, we have some problems. A lot of guys don't even know if their wheat, is alive or dead, and won't know for another month or two if it made it through the wintertime. So there's some real concerns there with production. The Southern Plains right now is dealing with some pretty epic drought conditions. It's not quite as bad as what it was 11 going into 12 down there. I have some friends that are in the Oklahoma panhandle that say that, we're not quite that dry yet, but we're working our way that direction. They limited the amount of wheat they were going to plant anyway, and what they did plant's kind of in shit conditions. So that's a concern. Soybeans have amazed me. They have seemed extraordinarily resilient. So we just had a huge number come out from basically the Brazilian version of the USDA, 107 or so million metric ton of production. So that'd be another 3 million metric above where we're at right now, 180 million bushel, or another half of our carryout basically is what the crop production estimates are kind of gaining out of Brazil. Logistic issues down there, though, and slow farmer sales have kept their beans kind of out of the pipeline. So there's been some interesting things going on there, but beans to still be holding above $10 in the face of the potential, 90 million acres or 88 to 92 million seems to be the general guess as to how many bean acres we're going to see. November beans still hanging out there at 10.05, I think it's given farmers a lot of opportunities. And without a major production issue, You know, I would not be the least bit surprised if this isn't the high end of things. But and it's the market's given farmers a chance to market their beans, but they, you know, a lot of them have, but there's others out there that are still waiting, surprisingly so. And then on corn, I'm still optimistic corn, but I'm a little nervous as the corn acres number comes in higher than anticipated, you know, 92, 93 million at the end of the month. The idea of seeing corn, beast corn rally much above $4 will be dependent upon South American, you know, second crop production issues.
Okay, so let's go. Let's pick off these issues one at a time.
So, yeah, that's a lot of shit I just talked about, but I'll let you. You're the host. You can dissect it.
Well, no, so I say that the dollar has nothing to do with it now. Bless you. I say that the dollar is already priced in all the Fed crap, and I say that, you know, for the last 2 to 3 years, we've been at the mercy of the dollar, and finally, I thought, and I said this a couple of months ago, that everybody got smart and they've already priced in the dollar action. And I believe the dollar is a stone sale here. And I think that the price action is telling me, and I thought that the sell-off in corn and beans and wheat was natural just because they had rallied so nicely that you're going to get some profit taking. And I don't think it had anything to do with the dollar.
Some ebb and flow.
So what do you think?
I like that idea better. I like that idea better. I would rather see a natural ebb and flow. You know, I always tell my customers that you don't want to see a rally go straight up. You know, of course, and there's not really any reason that the market would have to trade much higher than, you know, the 404 or whatever it hit on December futures at this point in time, knowing what we know about carry out and demand. You know, really when it comes down to it right now, even planted acreage wise will matter, but it will not matter as much as what we see happen for second crop corn conditions in Brazil, in my opinion.
Well, that would make sense. I would agree with that. I mean, again, I don't have a problem with your theory is correct. I mean, you're one of the smartest I know in this business. So the theory is correct. But again, I just look at the dollar and I say, okay, well, the dollar is not affecting it. And in fact, for the past, you know, like I said, 2 to 3 years, the dollar has been a major hindrance because it continued to rally. And of course, markets themselves, they peak at different times. And I believe that the dollar knows that the Fed's going to raise rates. I think that there's no more room in the dollar. I'd be a seller of dollars right here, which would obviously make me a buyer of grains. What do you say?
Yeah, I like that idea. I mean, I would not be the least bit surprised. I have been one of the weirdos that have agreed with you on the dollar trade, where I think it's kind of overweight to me. I think we've known that the Fed's going to raise rates. You know, the only thing that we could see right now would be maybe the people that are jumping on the dollar bandwagon may be shocked if we don't see an increase in interest rates next week, you know, and you could see the dollar kind of gap lower. But, yeah, I mean, I would agree to look at the buying of the grain side of things because, I mean, right now, to me, like I said, the big thing, U.S. production needs to be large no matter what because we have almost 15 billion bushel worth of demand anyway. So if we have one production hiccup in the U.S. and our demand stays steady, you know, we don't really have the ability to lose much in the way of corn production. What would change our demand from staying steady would be if Brazil this year manages to produce the 88, 89, you know, 91 million metric ton corn crop overall, which would be, you know, about 60 million of it would be, you know, produced here in the next couple months. If we see a hurdle or if we see them stumble, which I think we do. I mean, I think the Brazilian farmer, a lot of folks are talking about an increase in planted acreage. Well, the corn prices dropped significantly from the record highs we saw last year. Many in Brazil are forecasting their corn crop or their corn price to drop to below government support levels come June. So I really don't understand why anyone would be in a big hurry to try to plant corn, especially into wet, crappy conditions that they're dealing with right now. But the market is thinking that we're going to see this massive crop. And if we don't, there goes our export competition. I mean, Argentina can export some corn.
Hold that.
Yeah, we got that. But
hold that. Argentina, we'll pick it up with Argentina. That's all right. We got it.
Argentina.
My heart goes to Argentina. Anyways, this is the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, LibertyTalk.fm. You can download the show every single day. We are with Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains, the vice president of grains at Citizens Elevator. We'll be right back after the break. The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz coming right back. hour with Angie Setzer, the Vice President of Grains at Citizen Elevator, and also at Goddess of Grains on Twitter. Always brings good information. So we were talking about Argentina, and before you finish, I'm just going to say BS. You know, remember the card game? I say BS on Argentina. But go ahead, finish your thought, please.
You think BS on Argentina? Which part? I can't finish my thought and not hear what your BS on Argentina is.
I don't think it has. I'm a big believer of price, right? I'm a big believer of price discovery. Whatever they're going to do is, in my opinion, is already priced into the market. I don't think there's any, in today's world of trading any product, there is no real surprise anymore. That's the issue. That's why there's such a lack of real volatility anymore. And that's why we don't get these major limit moves anymore on any real product on these reports, because basically,
everyone already knows.
You got the big house. Look, you're a smart person. You've been doing this for a long time. If I said to you, okay, your whole job for the next quarter is to sit there and take every report that comes in and put together my numbers, I bet you could put together that report before it comes out.
Well, yeah. Yeah, I mean, you could have a general idea of where you're at. You're within a certain, there's no, in today's world of being relatively connected the way we are, there's no real shock. I mean, this isn't 1995 where, you know, you're relying on a fax and a guy, you know, granted 1995, there wasn't the South American production that there is, but, you know, I have people on Twitter that I interact with readily that are traders in Argentina and Brazil and will tell you crop expectations and things like that. I mean, that's not a shock. And yeah, I mean, in Argentina right now, the main thing I always kind of crack up about is people talk about, well, Argentina will increase their corn exports. How the hell are they going to do that? They're already, the USDA is anticipating they're going to export 85% of the crop that they're producing anyway. You know, their carryout is around 25 million bushels expected next year. You know, that they don't really have a lot, you know, and for those of you who aren't, where 25 million bushels sounds large, the U.S. carryout is 2.3 billion with a B, you know, so that's that. You go ahead and do the math. I don't even know how many times that is because I'm not a big math kid.
I give you something you can use. This will help you. Okay, a million seconds in time is 12 days. Okay.
Okay.
A billion seconds in time is 33 years.
Yeah. So put that in your pipe and smoke it when it comes to Argentina carryout. You know what I mean? Like if Argentina really. Yes, they mean a little bit in the swing of the business or what you see on there, but Argentina is not going to make up the difference between Brazil's inability to export versus the U.S. So if Brazil's second crop corn runs into an issue, which at this point in time they're planting it into muddy, wet conditions in a lot of areas that I've seen. Yeah, a lot of folks will say planting is ahead, but no one can tell you how many acres. So I always laugh about that where they're like planting pace is blah, 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 percent complete. Well, of how many acres, how many pieces of pie, you know, what are you talking about? So that's really what I'm watching. I mean, acres are acres in the U.S. Planting conditions will matter for the U.S. as we work into April and May. But the big market mover for corn over the next 2 to 3 months is going to be what happens in Brazil with their second crop production, hands down. So that's what I'm watching. You know, I think as we see Brazil kind of work their way back into the export market, which they are slowly, we just haven't seen any sign from the U.S. You know, we haven't seen a flash sale for exports in forever. Luckily, we haven't seen cancellations, knock on wood. So the soybean market, for some reason, continues to tread water. It's losing a little bit of air here and there, but it hasn't, you know, we haven't seen this sudden drop that some people were anticipating. And I don't know if we will. I think it could be that a month from now we could be trading a buck lower and, you know, there really hasn't been a bloodbath in soybeans. It's just been a slow, you know, 15 cents here, you know, maybe up 10 cents the next day and down 20 the next and stuff like that, where people don't even realize they're losing the money that they're losing. But for soybeans at this point in time, without some sort of North American production issue, you know, we could be singing the song of sorrow for them here as we move ahead.
Well, you know, again, and I go back to, you know, what you and I always talk about, and this is what makes you different than everybody else, is you get the fact that the markets already kind of know. I mean, the markets aren't stupid. And they're based on money, and with all the information and with all the big commercials out there, they already have a pretty good general idea And this is not the Clarence Beeks of Trading Places where everybody's standing around the machine now. I'm old enough to remember that because when I first started trading, we had 40 traders with one tiny little computer. If you remember the old, I forget what they call it, the green little print, and we all had to stack around the computer waiting for a report to come out. So now, you know, everybody's got a computer in their pocket. So I go back to the fact that we already know, and I think that guys and gals that make huge calls like $6 beans or $7 beans, I mean, that might be around, but they might be right eventually. But you and I both know, you as being a trader, know one thing for sure, that you'll have, if we're going to go to $7 beans, you'll make a fortune trading them because they're not going to $7 tomorrow. Right?
No, exactly. And that's it. I mean, when that $6 bean call came out here a couple months ago, and that we had that, maybe it was longer than that. The time tends to blur together anymore for me. But the $6 bean call came out, I had tons of phone calls. Tons of customers calling just in a panic. And it was like, wait a minute. If that happens, we have to get through August. We have to be harvesting this crop. So I'm not going to argue that you couldn't see beans dip below $7 if we end up projecting a carryout of 800 to 900 million bushel or something weird like that. You know, I cannot say that it's completely impossible that all of the stars can't align and produce a crop that or a price that low. But it's really one of those things where I feel that people that predict prices or significant price swings like that are doing it mainly to get attention. Because the fact remains that come December, if we're still trading beans $8 or $9, very few people are going to remember the guy that said $6. Come December, if we are trading beans at $6.50, he's a fucking genius. Pardon my French, beat that out, sorry. But still, he's, you know what I mean? He's like, the guy's a genius. Like, everyone should bow down because he's the commodity god. You know, and so for people, it's just the same thing as the guy that predicted 650 corn last year. You know, no one's really talking about it too much this year. Yeah, he's probably in the corner licking his wounds a little bit. And maybe his subscription sales have gone down a bit just because at the end of June last year, he was still pushing people buying calls and doing this, that, and the other thing, giving trade recommendations as a meteorologist, which amazed me. But, you know, he's gone away. But had he come out and we've seen 650 corn happen, everyone would have, the guy would have been a bajillionaire because everyone had been throwing money at him to try to get signed up to their service. So, yeah, I mean, to me, those extreme calls that you see are more to do with trying to capture celebrity than they are to actually mean anything for market moves.
So I'm going to go back to this, and this is one of the things that pisses me off more than anything. To me, that's an ignorant call. Okay, it's just like Jim Rickards is calling 10,000 gold right now, and I go, okay, great. So gold's going to go to 10,000, but in the meantime, I could make a bazillion dollars between now and 10,000 if it's going to go there. And to make a ridiculous call like that, you're trying to instill the fear into other people. And why bother? You look like an asshole when you're wrong. And now let's let it go and make a realistic call. And right now beans have been basically low, I think, it's been about 940 over the last year, and the high was a little bit over, was almost 12. So, you know, right now, is there any reason to believe that range is going to be violated?
No. At this point in time, no. No. We haven't even put a seed in the ground in the U.S. Now, we get to May 31st or June 15th or, you know, as proven in 2015, you know, when we planted beans in Missouri the 4th of July. That actually yielded relatively decently. I mean, beans have a long tail on them. You know what I mean? And at this point, no, I wouldn't say the range needs to be violated. I think farmers have some time. And that's what I've told my guys. We've sold, you know, 40-50% of their new crop beans at this point in time. And we're not selling more in case something changes dramatically in market expectations based on U.S. crop production.
Hold that thought. U.S. crop production, because this is important. We got to talk about this because this is where you excel, and this is what we both know. So this is the Bubba Show. We are with the goddess herself, Angie Setzer, Vice President of Grains at Systems Elevator, with her little baby in the background. And we're going to step by here a break. This is Liberty Talk. You get download the Bubba Show at libertytalk.fm. And also you can get Bubba's Bottom Line now at bubbatrading.com. Have a lot of fun there as well, and you'll enjoy that. I guarantee it. This is The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. We're going to stop by here for a break. We'll be right back with more from Angie after the break. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here. The long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialady, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got The Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report. Welcome back to The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with Angie Setzer, the Vice President of Grains at Citizen Elevator, the goddess of grains and the mother of one. And so we have an extra guest, her son, with us. All right, so Angie.
Yeah.
So we were talking about the trade. And again, you're watching price action. That's what you look at. I mean, you know, there's no reason to believe that anything's going to change. I mean, we know what's going to might go in. And until then, you know, are we going to have any dramatic movement? So go ahead and finish your thought on that, please.
Yeah, no, I don't think, we have a USDA report, love it or hate it, you know, in 3 weeks, the 31st. We'll see a number from the USDA on what they're anticipating for planted acreage that could have the inability to swing the market dramatically if we're far against what we expected. You know, last year, everyone went into the report anticipating lower corn numbers, higher bean numbers. The USDA came out and said, ha, surprise, not gonna happening. And so we saw a big swing in market moves that day. But really, from an overall standpoint, aside from a few days in there where we could see a swing here or there, from an overall standpoint, the only thing that's going to really move this market it going forward is going to be weather issues that develop as we work into spring and summer. If planting's delayed, there'll be some concerns there. If planting goes quicker than normal, so if we're drier than normal, planting should progress faster than usual, which is bearish, just because everyone anticipates you're going to see more corn acres and things of that nature. If it's wetter than usual and we see planting delays, you could see the market give us a little bit of upward movement, mainly in corn, because like I said in the last segment, you can plant soybeans, you know, almost until July anymore and still produce a crop in certain parts of the country. So really, you know, from an overall standpoint, like I said, in soybeans, you know, maybe the air kind of blows out of the balloon here really slowly, you know, a slow leak in a tire or something like that. But wheat and corn could be a little bit more sensitive to what we see develop. Still, of course, with South America and corn, like I've said nonstop today. But, you know, from an overall standpoint, though, we really will not see anything shocking develop until probably midsummer. Price-wise.
And I would agree with that as well. Unless we get the dramatic break in the dollar, which I think we're going to get, we might get some orders. And
in money flow, I mean, I can't sit here and I can't tell you the least bit of what to expect money flow-wise. You know, if all of a sudden the outside markets determine that, you know, buying your stocks or doing the things, you know, wherever they're putting their money right now, if we develop an inflationary ideology, if we think inflation is, you know, major inflation's around the corner, which the possibility is there, you know, I think it was, what, 2010? I'd have to look back at the charts, and I think I said this last time, and I never looked back, but we had a year there where there was nothing really fundamentally driving, you know, there wasn't really a fundamental driver. We saw a pop in market because of money flow due to an ideas over inflation. And so that's our wild card that we could look at that could push corn up for no apparent reason and wheat higher for no apparent reason. I'm using air quotes when I say no apparent reason because that's what the market will act like. Or your analyst will say, well, we don't know what's going on. Well, it's money flow.
Well, we always know.
It's simple money flow.
You and I always know what's going on. And so what I say to you is that inflation obviously would be the worst reason because all they'd be doing is taxing us more, and that's that hidden cost of inflation, yep. You know, the hidden tax of inflation, which is ridiculous. But, I mean, certainly, now, if I'm correct, I believe the stock market's going to correct pretty heavily here, and, mm-hmm. and that money will be looking for other places to go. So certainly we know that one of the big alternative investments are grains and things like that, so that could also pump up the prices as well. If we start to see some more money coming in other than just from farmers and producers, would that not be correct?
Yes, exactly. That's what I mean. I mean, I anticipate that you are going to see a market correction. But full disclosure, I've been anticipating a market correction in the Dow since 15,000. So thank God I'm not on CNBC because I'd be that asshole they don't invite back anymore. Because I've been, you know, to me, the monetary policies of the Fed and things of that nature have been questionable at best for economic strength. However, I'm wrong, obviously, because the economy seems to be doing decently based on what you're seeing and whoever you read online. But I do think there is a redirection in money that'll be coming in. And I think from an overall chart standpoint, looking at the last 10 years, a lot of people would say, okay, wheat's extraordinarily cheap. Corn's extraordinarily cheap. Beans are moderate at best from a cheap standpoint. You know, beans probably are would be the last thing that big money would come in and buy, in my opinion. And you know, basically when you start to talk inflation, then you start to talk about people buying things that hurt when they drop it on their toe. So here you go. You know, it's where you're at.
But it doesn't make you wrong legging you for correction since 15,000. I mean, I'm with you. I mean, you know. Again, the difference is if you say I'm looking for a correction or you say, hey, short the market here. Now, I know you didn't say short the market because we've talked about it a couple of times. You just said you're looking for a correction. So what you would say is I'm not putting new money to work here in the markets, but I don't like what's going on here. And, of course, the economic data has been horrible, but we continue to go higher. Why? Well, because we've got cheap money and cheap access to money, and basically the rich continue to get richer because they can take advantage of the less fortunate or the middle class because they don't have the same access to capital. So that makes it easier for them. In fact, I talked about that on yesterday's show, was that, you know, throughout this whole period, the rich have gotten richer because they had access to cheap money. They could buy back their stock. They could force less employees and do all these things that made them more money, but it did not help the middle class whatsoever. And I think that the middle class is still in a world of hurt because I don't think they're making any money yet. What do you think?
Oh, I agree completely. I am firmly implanted in, well, I guess you could say we're in the upper middle class, so maybe I cannot speak for the middle class anymore. But, you know, for me, well, I think we're still in the lower, you know, we're in the middle class, I guess, depending on who you compare us to. But you know, from an overall standpoint there, yeah, I agree. I don't think the economy has improved exceptionally so for many people in the middle class. Your healthcare costs have gone up significantly. Your cost of living have gone up significantly. Your income has not gone up significantly to match that. You know, you can say that minimum wage is higher for some and things of that nature, but you still can't function on minimum wage if that's your sole form of income and you're only working 35 to 40 hours a week. I do not think that from an economic standpoint in the Rust Belt, we have seen the improvement that those that are on Wall Street will tout. You know what I mean? If you'd have told me in 2012 that we would see the Dow trade to 21,000 by 2017, I'd have thought you were crazy, honestly. If you'd have told me in 2014, if you'd have told me probably November 8th of 2016 that we would elect Donald Trump and see the Dow rally like we've seen it, I'd have probably, you know, I've been taking more of a defensive posture from an investment standpoint for a while now, because what concerns me, and I've talked to my parents about this because they'll ask, is, you know, what do we do with our we've made money over the last 10 years, but we can't afford to lose any because we're 5 years from retirement. You know, well, to me, you take it and bury it in the backyard practically, because that's about the only way I can guarantee they aren't going to lose something if we were to have some sort of unexpected development take place or you know, I don't know what the catalyst would be. God forbid it's an attack or something of that nature. But the market itself, we've almost gone straight up. And I've always said that it's like a house of cards. You need a breather in there every now and again, you know, to really build a strong market. And I don't know if we've seen that. But this is a commodity trader on the outside looking in as well. So, you know, I am by far not an expert in paper stocks.
Well, but
the Snapchat IPO and things like that blow my mind. I just don't understand it.
Well, but, yeah, but that's right. You're an expert in trading, which is the same as being an expert in stocks. It doesn't matter because they all trade the same exact way. And all people that are close to retirement should be doing is they should always be 100% invested. They should just be learning how to hedge. Just like you hedge grains, you can hedge stocks. And you can do the same thing, except the difference with between grains and stock, excuse me, it's grains, you're going to sell. So you're not going to reinvest in the grains, whereas stocks, if you hedge them properly, you get to buy them at the bottom and continue to buy, and you get to create a compounding endowment model, which obviously in agriculture, you can't do that. So the hedging in stocks is even better than hedging in anything because you're actually building more wealth. And that's an interesting thing. I mean, you know, we talk about it a lot on the show, and, you know, I have it actually automated now. But, you know, we did a model account for an advisor firm. Started in 2010 with $1 million. That portfolio hedged now is worth $2.4 million. If you had hedged it, you'd have more stock in that same portfolio is worth $3 million. So again, you're looking at, you know, how do you protect, you know, things, and that's what you do for your clients is teach them how to protect, and you know, so that you can avoid any of these potential crises that come aboard by helping them protect themselves, right?
Yeah, exactly. And that's why, I mean, that's what everyone, in my opinion, needs to be looking at, if it's stocks or if it's grains. I mean, I talked about it this week in an article discussing soybean basis values. I'm a risk manager. Unfortunately, and I tell my boss this all the time because he says I'm Debbie Downer. Unfortunately, as a risk manager, my job is walking around and assessing what could cost people money. And being that, you know, that person that points out worst case scenarios, because if the market goes up, that's a best case scenario. No one's sad about that. There's ways that you can get yourself open to the upside. But there's a lot of ways it's very difficult to keep your down.
Keep your open upside, because that's an important thing as well when you are hedging, like you teach them how to do it. This is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horace, with Angie Setzer, Vice President of Grains at Citizen Elevator, the goddess of grains on Twitter. And, of course, LibertyTalk.fm allows you to download the Bubba Show every single day and the Sporting Edge on the weekends. We'll be right back with more from Angie. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horace, coming right back to you. Show Todd Bubba Horowitz with Angie Setzer, the Vice President of Grains at Citizen Elevator, as well as the Goddess of Grains on Twitter. And all right, so you were talking about, all right, Debbie Downer, finish your thoughts. But again, it's not really a downer. You're trying to be realistic and tell people what to do.
Yeah, my life is because I've seen it. You know, I try to explain this to customers. I've been on both sides. When I first started trading and trading grain in 2004, you know, the average corn price was $1.75, $1.80. And the first time that we saw the corn market trade above $3, I think was in 06, 07 time frame. And everyone went nuts and they sold a bunch of grain and they sold 3 years out into 2009. And by 2009, we were trading $5 corn. And I remember just people being so angry that they had any percentage of their crop hedged at $3 when it was $5 and yada, 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 even though they were selling 80% of their crop at that $5 mark. You know, they'd had a tiny amount that was hedged at the lower number. And a big amount that was hedged at the higher number, but they were still very frustrated with that. Well, now over the stretch of the last 3 years, 2014 forward, a lot of farmers have held off on hedging because they remember that, and they end up taking a crop that they could have gotten $4.40 for. You know, they could have gotten paid $4.40 at one point. $4.49 last year was the high. You know, they could have gotten paid that, but didn't, because they thought it might go to $5, and then they have to figure out how to make ends meet at $3.25 to $3.50. You know, it's a much worse scenario to be in, to have an opportunity at a high side, you know, for a sales standpoint, not do it, and then try to figure out how you're going to make ends meet on a product that's now worth a dollar or more less. Than it is to say, okay, we're going to sell at $4.40, maybe buy a nice out of the money call, spend a nickel or a dime on a lottery ticket, so to speak. And if the market rallies big time and we see $6 or $7 corn again, we're able to pocket a little bit of that. I mean, I would much rather, and that's what I tell my guys all the time, I'd much rather have them bitch at me for having to deliver $3.75 corn when they can sell the rest at $5 or $6, than have them not sell $3.75 corn and call me up and ask me how they're going to make money at $3. And that's just from experience on my side. But in my life, I am Debbie Downer. I have to, from a business standpoint, assess, you know, who are we not going to get paid back from an AR standpoint, or what are we looking at from a risk and spreads and basis and things of that nature. And my boss a lot of times picks on me and says that I'm the cloud of doom. I'm the one that has to come in and say, hey, wait a minute, this could go wrong. But as a risk manager, that is my job.
But I mean, again, that doesn't make you Debbie Downer. It makes you realistic. And again, I think what farmers and producers especially forget, and investors in general forget, is that markets don't go up forever. They do have corrections. And your job as a farmer, especially if you're investing, you can absorb a little bit more risk because you have another job that's for bringing you in money. But if you're a farmer and you're not protecting your input costs and you're not making sure that you lock in what it's going to cost you to live that year, then you're looking for a lot of trouble, and you will end up scrambling at the end of the year. And that is the bigger problem. So if you're hedged and you're protected, you can always do something else. You can always, as you said, buy calls. You can sell, but you can do a million things you want to get long and buy the market. But you should always be in the habit of protecting what you have, knowing that if my input cost this year is going to be $3.80 and I can sell $4 corn right now, I should probably take that. And then if I think it's going to be a better year, I can just go out and buy some and buy some futures or buy some options and play the game that way. What do you think?
Oh, I agree 100%. We've talked about it several different times. Farmers are the only ones that will, you know, in a lot of ways, go out and put $1 million into the ground and then see what happens.
Yeah.
And I mean, crop insurance has helped. You know, I had a conversation with a farmer the other day that someone was recommending he buy puts. We literally just set the value of crop insurance. So on an APH, his actual production history on that farm, you know, he has 155 bushel to the acre that he is that he generally produces. 124 bushel of that at 85% protection on revenue protection is basically guaranteed to be priced at $3.96, because that's how crop insurance works. We set the revenue price guarantee is $3.96 right now. And so that means that on 124 bushel to the acre, basically, he has a guaranteed revenue of 124 times 396 on all of his acres. He doesn't need to go out and buy puts. He's got a little bit of coverage on that side from a crop insurance standpoint, but not everyone goes out and does the crop insurance thing. Or they go out and they'll protect 60% and for some reason think that they're covered on that. So it's pretty amazing. But yes, as a farmer, there are a lot of guys that go out, or a lot of farmers that go out and like I said, literally put millions of dollars into the ground with no true plan as to how they're going to turn that into profit. They'll just see what happens. And so my job is to try to convince guys in that mindset to look at, okay, how do you protect your profit and ensure that you're still in business here as we move ahead?
And so that brings me to the question that, you know, why are we like that? And again, it's such a simple method to do, but yet I believe that a lot of farmers and producers don't get the fair and square information. You've got too many people trying to handle them, you know, kind of we talked about mm-hmm. before, and try to handle them out of their capital and not worried really about it, whereas you directly are concerned about what they're doing because, of course, you and I both know the value of a lifetime customer, and that is that if you take care of them, you do things right, then they're going to make money, you're going to make money, and everybody's going to be happy. What do you think about that?
No, I agree 100%. I mean, that's why, you know, I was so grateful that the customer called me and said, hey, you know, this marketing group that I'm working with is suggesting I buy puts right now. I will be honest, it blew my mind. It wasn't a move to protect the farmer, unless the farmer doesn't intend on going out and purchasing crop insurance. It was a move to generate some revenue. Things are boring. Things are slow. You know, there hasn't really been a lot of volatility in the market that's allowed guys to go out and get crazy, so to speak, you know, so it's a hard life. I mean, that's the one thing that, and we could probably have a conversation about it, and I probably won't make many friends, but in agriculture, the increase in the amount of brokers that are out there, young people who were in their early 20s when they started and are now, you know, maybe 30, 35 or whatever, that have went out and made money on the volatility, you know, having a guy buy some puts when the market was higher and buying calls when the market's lower and rolling out of positions and doing this, that, and the other thing. There was a shit ton of money made in that industry between 2008 and 2014, 15. Now there's a lot of people that are trying to figure out how the hell they're going to make ends meet, because the lack of volatility in the market means that you can't convince a farmer that he needs all of these strategies that were able to be pushed over the time period of big market moves. You know, I will always be here for my customers, because it doesn't matter whether I'm paying, you know, $350 or $750. I'm here to help them try to maximize their revenue as best they can, because I turn actual physical bushels into cash. I'm not here trading paper. You know, I'm moving their grain into the pipeline. So I'm in a different avenue or a different side of the industry. But there are a lot of people out there right now that are pushing strategies that are not necessarily beneficial to the farmer or to the customer. And I think you'll probably see the same thing in the stock market with investors, brokers out there that aren't necessarily pushing the right thing. They're pushing what's going to help their bottom line.
They're going to help push what makes them commission, just like when you see these assholes on TV talking about this stuff, that it's only got to do with their own benefit. And, of course, Angie Setzer, the goddess herself, always brings a fresh light to what we talk about, because, again, you and I have a very similar a look, and it's really more about protecting, because we know that at the end of the day, we're going to be in good shape if we take care of everybody around us. As always, thank you so much for being here, my dear.
Oh, thank you for having me. I always enjoy it.
We always have a good time. This has been Angie Setzer, the Vice President of Grains at Citizen Elevator, also on Twitter, at the goddess of grains, and she is a goddess too. This is the Bubba Show, Top of Horus. LibertyTalk.fm, get you the download of the Bubba Show and over the weekends, and now with the NCAAs, you got the Sporting Edge with Xander now, also downloaded at the sport at LibertyTalk.fm. The Bubba Show, Top of Bubba Horus. Thanks for being here, everybody. We'll see you on Monday. Have a great weekend. We'll see you later. The Bubba Show, Top of Bubba Horus.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.